Well, good evening. How are you this evening? I think, yeah, there it is. When we look at the story of Jesus in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, what we find once again is an itinerant teacher traveling the countryside, giving teachings on a new way of doing life. Jesus was not a theologian, although he was, but his teaching was not theologically intense. It wasn't weighted on the side of theology. He didn't go around trying to change how people believed. The Jesus we see in the Jesus story actually went around trying to change how people chose to live. There's a difference between theology and ethics. I think they're related, but these two terms, orthodoxy, which is right beliefs, and orthopraxy, which is right practice. Jesus spent the majority of his teaching on orthopraxy, because if he could teach people how to live differently, rooted and grounded in this new series of ethics, as we talked about this weekend and last night, or the very first night, this new ethical teaching was rooted and grounded in a radically different way of seeing God first, seeing ourselves, and seeing everyone else around us. In order to follow Matthew chapter 5, the Sermon on the Mount, and Luke chapter 6, the Sermon on the Plain, it requires that you begin to look at God differently. How many would agree with that? No? Okay, a couple of you. And it requires also that you begin to look at yourself differently. If you agree with that, say yes. And it agrees that you, and it also means, it presupposes that you look at everyone else around you differently as well. At the core of this new way of doing life that Jesus called the kingdom, this new way of seeing God, new way of seeing ourselves, new way of seeing others, and this new way of doing life, this total rearrangement of society and how we do life, at the core of this kingdom was Jesus' teaching on nonviolence. This is why the core of the book of Revelation uses the image of a lamb to represent that Jesus. Take with me this evening Revelation chapter 10. Take your handouts with me. We're going to begin unpacking some of this. Now, tonight you have also been given all of the handouts at once. That is because we are going to try to make as much progress as we can through the first half. And then whether we're done or not, we're going to take an intermission. Are you with me? When there's a convenient place to stop. And then when we come back, we'll do our best to finish it this evening. We're going to try to cover just two chapters, Revelation 10 and Revelation 11. Now, Revelation 10 will be easy. We'll be done with it in 15 minutes. Revelation 11 is what we're going to spend the majority of our time on. Revelation 10, then I saw, what does it say? Another mighty angel. Circle that mighty angel coming down from heaven. He was robed in a what? With a rainbow above his head. His face was like the sun. His legs were like fiery pillars. He was holding a what? Scroll. Remember, this is the scroll that is being unsealed. Are you with me? That has been unsealed, which lay open in his hand, and he planted his right foot on the sea and his left foot on the land, and he gave a loud shout, like the roar of a lion. When he shouted, the voices of the seven thunders spoke. And when the seven thunders spoke, I was about to write, but I heard a voice from heaven say, seal up what the seven thunders have said, and do not write it down. So don't ask me what they said, I don't know. Then the angel I had seen, standing on the sea and on the land, raised his right hand to where? And swore by him who lives forever and ever, who created the heavens and all that is in them, and the earth and all that is in them, and the what? And the sea and all that is in them. Remember, these are the areas over which, when the trumpets blast, that Satan begins to stir up trouble, and where we see God's activity in the plagues. And we're going to talk about that more when we get to the plagues, this Exodus imagery of action and God meeting and exceeding that action, showing he's the true God of these, of this region, of these areas. But we'll get there, I promise. But he says, he swore by him who lives forever, who made the earth, the sea, that there will be no more what? But in the days of the seventh angel, when he is about to sound his trumpet, the mystery of God will be what? Accomplished, just as he announced to his servants, the prophets. There's a mysterious something. It's a mystery that God had proclaimed through the prophets. And it is finally going to reach its fulfillment right before what event did he say? That seventh trumpet sounds. We're going to look at that. We're going to find out what that is. That's what Revelation 11 is all about. Then the voice that I heard from heaven spoke to me once more. Go, take the scroll that lies open in the hand of the angel who's standing on the sea and on the land. So I went to the angel and asked him to give me the little scroll. And he said to me, take it and what? Eat it, and it will turn your stomach how? Sour, but in your mouth it will be as. So I took the scroll from the angel's hand and I what? I ate it. It tasted as sweet as honey in my mouth, but when I had eaten it, my stomach turned how? Sour. Then I was told, you must prophesy again about many what? Peoples, nations, languages, and this time, what word does he interject in there? Kings. Now, you'll find each time he uses that phrase, he changes one of those words because he wants to emphasize that in this context. Look over in Revelation 5, verse 2 in your gray section. Remember what we covered last night and previous nights. And I saw a, what does it say? A mighty angel proclaiming in a loud voice, who is worthy to break the seals and to open the... How many saw last night through Ezekiel, the use of Ezekiel in both Revelation 5 and tonight in Revelation 10, how this scroll that was sealed and has been loosened is the same scroll that this angel is bringing to John now. It's the vision. It's the war scroll, so to speak. You're going to find that part out tonight. It's this scroll that's been unsealed. He brings it to John. It's now opened. And what does he ask John to do with it? Eat it. He's got to prophesy to many people, many nations, kindreds, tongues, tribes, and kings. It's interesting that the angel in Ezekiel asks Ezekiel to eat the scroll as well and says, I've called you to prophesy to Israel. John takes this imagery. And he has this angel coming to him saying, eat the scroll. It'll be sweet in your mouth, bitter in your stomach. But now I'm calling you to proclaim something to the nations. Are you with me so far? Do you get the imagery? That's the storyline. Daniel 12. You get to see where John's quoting from. He ties this angel that comes with this scroll into the vision, into the language of Daniel 12. Now, I want to be careful. We are not saying that this is what Daniel 12 was about. What we're saying is that John quotes with Daniel, just like he's done with other Old Testament passages. How many of you have seen night after night that John will quote a phrase from the Old Testament? And what he wants you to do is go back to that passage and read the what's going on in the context and use that to interpret what he's saying now in the book of Revelation. See, the context of Revelation is the first century followers of Jesus. But there's this angel that comes down with a scroll, and this angel has the same description of the angel in Daniel 12. What John's whispering to you is go back and read Daniel 12, because the language there is applicable to this angel too, as well. So let's go to Daniel chapter 12. If you agree or not agree, if you understand what I've said so far, say yes. Then I, Daniel, looked, and two others appeared, one standing on the bank of the and one on the other. And one of them said to the man clothed in linen who was upstream, what question? Shall it be until the end of these wonders? Let's get there. The man clothed in linen who was upstream raised his, what does it say? Right hand and his left hand towards where? Heaven, and swore by him who, How many see the language parallels between these two? If you see them, let me see your hand. Yes, what's happening here is this angel is coming, and what question is he answering? How long? What question has been asked by those who were dying for Jesus under that fifth seal with their souls under the altar? How long? This scroll is being unrolled and it is being unsealed and it is being brought to John to answer what question? How long? How long is it going to take until the mystery that you've been promising to all the prophets is brought to its fulfillment? How long are we going to be dying for what? For following Jesus? How long is this going to take? Finish Daniel 12. It says it would be for a what? Time. Two times and half a time. Now that's Daniel's way of saying 3.5 years. A time in the book of Daniel is a year. So you have a time. How many is that? Then you have times. So how many does that add to it? 2. So that's 3. And half a time. How many is that? That makes 3.5. So what you've got here is an angel answering the question, how long, with a time times and half a time. But in John, you have an angel coming down that looks just like this angel. And he proclaims, not a time times and half a time. He proclaims, delay will be, what does he say? No more. How many are seeing the parallels? Delay will be no more. Now, John's not going to ignore this time, times, and half a time. He's going to find a way to work it in, and you're going to see that. But it says, this is what it's waiting on, and then, that when the shattering of the power of the holy people comes to an end, all these things would be what? What element is John interjecting into our thinking through using Daniel chapter 12? That it's going to involve the shattering of who? Talk to me. Who's going to involve the shattering of who? The holy people. Now here's what the question I want you to answer. Who are they being shattered by? Yes, ultimately the devil. But who are they being shattered by? This would have been very important for first century followers of Jesus. Whom was Jesus shattered by? Certainly the devil. But whom did the devil use to shatter him? His own people, the very people he was trying to save. Whom are going to be the ones shattering God's holy people, the followers of the Lamb, the very ones he's calling them to win, to save, to reach. Are you with me so far? Which is an encouragement once again, not to look at them as the enemy. They are not the enemy. They are simply a conduit of the enemy. And how they respond to the enemy's attack through these people determines whether they win these enemies or whether these enemies are destroyed. How many can see that's why nonviolence was so vital to the early church? Nonviolence is the way whereby which we win our enemies rather than kill them. You remember once again what King said, to use him as another example. We will win in the end the double victory. We will match your capacity to inflict suffering with our capacity to endure that suffering. And in the end, we will win a double victory because we will not only win what we are seeking to accomplish, we will win you in the process. Was the early church trying to establish, differently a little bit than King, was the early church trying to establish Christ's reign, the reign of the Lamb on planet Earth? Yes, but would it be enough? Could they have accomplished that through violence? Only theoretically. See, in a sense, they could have. Not in a genuine sense. Are you with me? But would everybody have bowed the knee to Jesus if they had a sword above their head? It would have been outward and it would have been compulsory. I agree with you, it would not have been genuine. Amen? But would they have bowed the knee? But that's not enough. What they're trying to accomplish is not victory or power over the enemy. They're trying to win their enemy to freely and willingly bow the knee themselves. That can only be done through nonviolence that is motivated by a love for the enemy that's trying to reach the enemy, not kill him. Does that make sense to you? Okay, it says in Amos 3:7, surely the Lord does nothing without revealing his what? To his servants, the... This is the secret. This language, once again, is what John is using when he says the mystery of God will be accomplished just as he announced to his servants, the prophets. What is this mystery that he announced to the servants through the prophets? Well, it begins actually in Isaiah 2. But before we get there, let's look at one more phrase that he uses. Remember, Daniel 12, he ties this to Daniel 12. And the question is, why does he tie this to the book of Daniel? Again, what is the one chapter in the book of Daniel that John quotes more than any other? Daniel chapter 7. Let's read 7 once again so we can get it in our minds as we read this. I watched in the night visions, and I saw one like a what? Son of man coming with the... And he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. To him was given what? And kingship. That, what does it say? All peoples, nations, and languages should do what? Serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that shall not what? And his kingship is one that shall never be. But the holy ones, interesting, these are the same holy ones that in chapter 12 of Daniel are being what? Shattered. It says the holy ones of the Most High shall receive the and possess that kingdom for how long? Forever and ever. Revelation 11:15, the seventh angel sounded his trumpet. There were loud voices in heaven which said, the kingdom of this world has become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Messiah, and he will watch this. John's quoting Daniel chapter 7 again. Reign for how long? Forever and ever and ever. See, in the seventh angel, this sounding of the seventh angel, the seventh trumpet, what it is announcing is that finally what was promised to the prophets in the past, one of them being Daniel chapter 7, that all nations, kindreds, languages, and people would serve him. This will be accomplished. This was the great hope of the early church. And some of you say, well, Herb, I don't know about that. I mean, let me ask you this. Why was Jonah so upset? Because even though God had prophesied he would destroy Nineveh, what ended up happening? They all repented. And why did Jonah get upset? But you said you were going to destroy them, Lord. Why are you see, now you're making me look bad. Are you with me? All of these stories the early church would have known. Let's look at what was promised. Look at Isaiah 2, 2 through 4. In days to come, the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established as the highest of the mountains and shall be raised above the hills. How many of them? All the nations shall stream to it. It's a mystery how this could happen. All the nations shall stream to it. Many people shall come, shall say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He may teach us his ways, that we may walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth instruction, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall what? Judge between the nations. What I want you to see in this word judge, it is the synonymous of reign. He will rule. He will judge. How many remember the book of Judges? When God would raise up a judge, what was their role in the book of Judges? But to govern during that time. What it says is he will judge between the nations. He shall, what's that word? Arbitrate for many peoples. So when we see the call go out to the nations in Revelation chapter 14, fear God and give glory to him, every nation, kindred, tongue, tribe, and people, for the hour of his judgment has come. That is not him coming back ready to kick some hind end. Are you hearing what I'm saying? That is the Lamb calling them to submit to his just and equitous reign, his just and equitous arbitration. It says, he judge between the nations, shall arbitrate for many peoples. They shall beat their swords into what? plowshares and their spears into nations shall not lift up sword against what? Neither shall they learn war. What does it say? Why do they start acting like this? Well, whose activity does this look like? Whose activity does this look like? Why do they beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks? Because they've submitted and they finally followed who? Now they look. How many would love a world where all the kings of the nations and all the nations and all the kingdoms and every nation, kindred, tongue, tribe, and people finally submit to doing life according to that imagery? How many would love a world that looks like that? This is what the early church was working for. Would not be done with greater violence. It would be done in the way of the cross. An enemy love to the degree that you will not enact violence towards your enemies. But even if need be, you would let those enemies exercise violence against you and bear it in an effort to convert your enemy to the Lamb as well. Has it worked in the past? I want to recommend to you a documentary entitled A Force More Powerful. Once again, A Force More Powerful. It begins with the history of Gandhi. It goes through the history of Martin Luther King. Then it goes into Russia and Poland and World War II. And it goes through over the last 100 to 150 years, the different movements and the things that have been accomplished on this planet through nonviolence. Now, once again, they were using those methods to usually make changes in a kingdom of this world or for a kingdom of this world to triumph over another kingdom of this world. All I want you to see is how powerful these techniques really are. The early church was trying to use these same techniques, the techniques of the Lamb, not to establish a kingdom of this world over another kingdom of this world, but to establish the kingdom of the Lamb, and that all would submit to His just and equitous reign. Look at Zechariah 2. Sing and rejoice, O daughter Zion, for lo, I will come and dwell in your midst, says the Lord. Look at these next two words. What does it say? Many nations will join themselves to the Lord on that day, and shall be my people, and I will dwell in your midst, and you shall know that the Lord of hosts has sent me to you. Ezekiel 37, 27 through 28. Keep looking. What is this mystery that was revealed to the servants, the prophets? My dwelling place shall be, what does it say? With them, and I will be there, and they shall be my. Then, who does it say? The nations shall know that I, the Lord, sanctify Israel when my sanctuary is among them forevermore. Now, John takes this language and doesn't apply it just to Jerusalem. Look at Revelation 21:3. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, see, the home of God is among, what does it say? The peoples. Remember, every people, nation, kindred, tongue, tribe, and people. It says, and he will dwell with them as their God, and they will be his, and he himself will be. He uses what was promised to Isaiah. Arise and shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For darkness shall cover the earth, thick darkness the peoples. But the Lord will arise upon you, and his glory will appear over you. Nations shall come to your what? And kings to the brightness of your. In Revelation 21:24, again, he uses this same language, and he says the who? The nations will walk by its light. The kings of the earth will bring their splendor into it. Again, justice is not love killing that which disagrees with it. Love, justice is love correcting that which disagrees with it, that which is out of harmony with it. You'll see that more and more as we go through. Daniel 7:14 again. Get it in your mind. We'll review. And then we're going to be done with chapter 10. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. And what does it say? All peoples, nations, and every language worshiped him. This was the prophecy. His dominion is an everlasting dominion. It will not pass away. And his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. Revelation 1:5. And from Jesus Christ, who is the faithful witness, the firstborn from the dead, it calls him the, what does it say? The ruler of who? The kings of the earth. Remember, that's a quote from from Psalms chapter 2. We read that last night. To him who loves us and has freed us from our sins by his blood. The challenge that the early church was facing is that although Jesus is the ruler of the kings of the earth now by virtue of the cross, he had wrested all authority from the devil back to himself. He had won that. The problem was, is there are obstacles. Look at Revelation 17:18. In that chapter, the obstacle is likened to a woman that you saw is the great city that presently does what? Rules over the kings of the earth. Revelation 19, it says, then I saw not a woman, but now a what? A beast, and the kings of their earth and their armies gathered together to make what? War against the rider on the horse and his what? How many remember that his army last night, the army of the Lamb, we looked at in Revelation 7. How many are piecing some of this together? In Revelation 21:24, here's what the outcome of that war will be. Nations will walk by its what? And the kings of the earth will bring their what? I want you to see these three verses. Revelation 17, the great city rules over the kings of the earth. Revelation 1, he's called the ruler of the kings of the earth. There's a great war in which the kings of this earth are involved. And what is the outcome in Revelation 21? The kings of the earth will, in the end, bring their splendor into the New Jerusalem. How many of you think that's beautiful imagery? Why does the warfare end victoriously for the Lamb? Because of the methods that the Lamb uses. This is what is in this open scroll. This is what followers of the Lamb must use if they're going to be a genuine participant in the Lamb's army. Again, would Martin Luther King Jr. have said what he was doing was warfare? Would he have said that? Yes, but it was warfare through a different means and methodology. If you agree with that, say yes. Did he call his participants, those who worked with him and followed those principles, did he call them soldiers? But isn't it interesting that you would call those who were using nonviolence soldiers? See, some of you think that's a contradiction. I don't think it's a contradiction at all. It's just soldiers of a different kind of army. How many remember that from Joel 2? An army that has never been nor ever will be. It's a unique kind of army. This is an army that looks like who? The Lamb. And remember, these are methods that mirror the methods of the Lamb. All right, spin over. We're going to start with Revelation chapter 11. And with all of this in mind, remember, this angel comes down. And we need to find out, why is it, two things, why is it sweet in his mouth and bitter in his stomach? And number two, whatever we're going to find in this open scroll, the seventh trumpet, when it sounds, it proclaims that all the kingdoms of this world have now become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ. When would that be accomplished? The trumpet's announcing it. When would that mystery be fulfilled? Right before that trumpet sounds. Because it has to be accomplished before the trumpeter can announce it, correct? But what he's announcing is what that mystery was. If you can see that, say yes. That's the mystery that's going to be accomplished. That all the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our God and of his Christ. The question we need to be looking at is, how will that be accomplished? And why is the revelation of this how sweet in the mouth but bitter in his stomach? I would submit to you, and you just agreed with me, that all the kingdoms of this world becoming the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ. How many think that would be sweet in your mouth? That'd be beautiful. But when it's unveiled, how it's going to be accomplished, how does it leave John feeling here? Sick to his stomach. Because it would not come through us slaying our enemies. but us allowing ourselves to be slain by our enemies. And who is our mascot? The Lamb who was slain. Beautiful imagery, not pleasant imagery. How many would agree? But how many think it's beautiful even though it's unpleasant? Beautiful. Revelation 11, I was given a read. This is going to take, we'll break in about 15 minutes. How's that? We'll do this for about 15 minutes. But Revelation 11, I just want to warn you, once again, this is one of those passages where it's going to take you wanting to understand it. Are you with me? This isn't one of those presentations you can just sit there and get something from. You're going to have to engage here and try to work with me. I'm going to try to make it as simple as I can, I promise. Revelation 11, I was given a what? A reed like a what? A measuring rod. And I was told, go and measure the temple of God and the altar. And I believe that's the altar of incense. And I'll tell you why in a moment, but bear with me. So remember, that's what's been the issue all along. From under the altar, there were what? Souls crying out what question? How long? In the beginning of the trumpets and the end of the seals, we see that angel again offering up that prayer and heaven being silent so that God can hear it. And the answer is given with that censer that's thrown down to the earth, and there was a mighty what? Earthquake. Remember, what did the earthquake indicate? It was symbolic of the war of the Lamb, the way that the Lamb fights war through the revelation of love and self-sacrifice. Now, again, this angel was brought up in Revelation chapter 10. Let's keep going with it. It says, the altar with its worshipers, but exclude the outer court and do not measure it, because it has been given to the what? And they will trample on the holy city for how long? How much time is 42 months? John's going to rework that back in. Just hang with me. And it says, and I will appoint my two what? My two witnesses. And they will prophesy for how long? 121 days. If you give the year 360 days, which is how they did back then, you come up with 42 months or 3.5 years. You've got this 42 months where the outer court is going to be what by the Gentiles? Trampled. Remember, the holy people would be shattered, is what we find in Daniel chapter 12. They would be trampled. Now, during this time, my two witnesses will prophesy for how long? 1,260 days. During this same time period, my holy witnesses will be witnessing. They will prophesy for 1,260 days, clothed in, what is that word? That's mourning. Are you with me? That's not victory yet. That's mourning. They are the two, we'll get into this in a second, but just let's get the storyline down. They are the two olive trees and the two what? Lampstand. They're the olive trees and the two lampstands. And they stand before the Lord of the earth. If anyone tries to what? Harm them. Fire comes from their... I want you to understand this is from their what? Circle that word mouths. That's going to become important for the rest of the book of Revelation. And devours their enemies. It's fire from their mouths that devours their enemies. What is it that comes from your mouth? It's the proclamation of the gospel to every kindred, tongue, tribe, and people. And how does the Lamb devour his enemies? Destroy his enemies? Remember what Abraham Lincoln said, do I not destroy my enemies when I turn them into my friends? It says, if anyone tries to harm them, fire comes from their mouth and devours their enemies. This is how anyone who wants to harm them must die. Understand, that's not to be taken literally. It's the way a pacifist would kill their enemies. Are you hearing what I'm saying? How does a pacifist kill their enemy? By turning that person into their... By winning that enemy into a friend. It says, this is how anyone wants to harm them must die. They have power to shut up the sky so that it will not rain during the time they are prophesying. They have power to turn waters into blood and to strike the earth with every kind of plague as often as they want. We'll get into that. I know it doesn't sound pretty, but we'll get into it. Now when they have finished their testimony, watch what happens. The beast that comes up from the abyss will what? Attack them and will what? They will die. And their bodies will lie in the public square of the great city, which is prophetically called what? Sodom and where also their Lord was crucified. There's your example. For 3.5 days, how many years did they prophesy? 3.5. How many days did they lie dead? 3.5 days. Many from every, what does it say? People, tribe, language, and who? Will gaze on their bodies and refuse them. The inhabitants of the earth will gloat over them and will celebrate by sending each other gifts because these two prophets had tormented those who live on the earth. Let's look at where John pulls this language from. Let's start with the measuring of the temple. In Daniel chapter 12, get rid of some of these papers. In Daniel chapter 12, then I, Daniel, looked, and there before me, two others on the bank of the river, one the opposite. One of them said to the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river, what question again? Will it be before these astonishing things are fulfilled? The man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river lifted his right hand and his left hand toward heaven and said, I heard him swear by him who lives forever, saying, it will be for a what? Time, a what? Times and... This is that 42-month period that John's pulling out of Daniel and giving it a spin and using it in Revelation 11. It says, when the power of the holy people has been finally what? Shattered, all these things will be... What John is doing is taking this passage. He's quoting it in Revelation chapter 11. And he's saying this 42 months, this 1260 days, this 3.5 years, this will be the time period wherein God's people are shattered. And it will climax, it will end in them being what? What did the storyline say? How does it end? Them be not shattered. Look at Revelation 11. What happens with the two witnesses in Revelation 11? They'll be killed. We'll get there. Just to get the storyline. Daniel 8, 13. Watch this. Then I heard one holy one speaking, and another holy one said to the other that spoke, for what questions asked here? So John links these two passages in this vision concerning the, what does it say? The regular burnt offering, that's the altar of sacrifice out in the courtyard, and the transgression that makes desolate, and the giving over of the what? The sanctuary and the to be what word? What would the Gentiles do to the outside court for 42 months? They would trample it. Again, don't try to go down the road of trying to figure out what Daniel's talking about here. Just see how John is using Daniel's language and try to figure out what John's talking about with this same language. He's connecting them. The reason he went to Daniel 8, I think it's slick the way he does it. He found a connection between Daniel 12 and Daniel 8. What question was it? How long? So then he goes to Daniel 8 and he takes the language of that and he uses it in this measuring of the temple, but leave the outside court where the regular burnt offerings are, leave that out, because just like it was trampled in the language back there in Daniel 8, it'll be trampled in Revelation 11 as well. And it will be trampled for how long? For a time, times, and half a time. Flip over on the back. We'll keep going. Revelation 8. When the Lamb opened the seventh seal, there was silence in what? For how long? Half an hour. I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and seven trumpets were given to them, and another angel with a what? Golden censer stood at the what? The altar. He was given a great what? Quantity of incense to offer with the prayers of all the saints. And what are the saints praying? What question are they asking? How long is this going to take? And on the golden altar that is before the throne, and the smoke of the incense and the prayers of the saints rose before God from the hand of the angel. And the angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and threw it on the... There were peals of thunder, rumblings, flashes of lightning, and an earthquake. In Revelation 14, we see it again. Then another angel came out from the... The angel that had the authority over what? What altar is it then that he's talking about here? It's the altar of incense. This is the focal point, because this altar is the focal point, because what question is being asked from this altar? How long? This is why, flip back over to Revelation 11, what we're trying to discern, when it says, go and measure the temple of God and the what? The altar and its worshipers. This is talking about the inside of the sanctuary. This is talking about that inner altar where the incense was being offered. He's not telling him to go measure the altar that's outside in the courtyard. Why? Because that altar of burnt offerings is going to be trampled by the Gentiles for how long? 42 months or 3.5 years. If everyone's with me so far, say yes. We're just trying to understand, get the context of what John's even talking about. In Revelation 6:10, remember, they cried out with a loud voice, Sovereign Lord, holy and true, how, what? Long will it be before you judge and vindicate our blood on the inhabitants of the earth? Now, another element, why does he even bring up the sanctuary to begin with? I think it's slick that he uses the language of Daniel 8. To show that the outside's going to be trampled, you need to be focusing on the inside, what's going on in the inside. What is he even talking about? In John 14, verse 1, it says, Jesus said, do not let your hearts be what? Troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. In my... What does he mean by Father's house? He's not talking about heaven. You see, he had talked about my Father's house before. I want to encourage you to go back and look at every time that Jesus says my Father's house, look at what he's talking about. My Father's house is a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves. What was he referring to when he said my Father's house there? The temple. Isn't this what John's referring to here? The temple. Are you with me so far? I'm not connecting the dots yet. We're just getting the pieces on the puzzle, on the table. He says, in my Father's house there are many what? In the earthly temple in Jerusalem, there were many dwelling rooms, many lodgings where the priests, when they would come to minister in the table or in the temple, that's where they would dwell during their time of doing ministry. He says, in my Father's house there are many dwelling places. If it were not so, would I have told you that I may go and prepare a place for what? You. Where was Jesus going when he said this in John 14? See, we have misunderstood this passage. Christians have misunderstood this passage. Some of you are confused right now, so let me back up. I think part of the confusion is because we've misunderstood what this is talking about. We've thought my Father's house is full of many dwelling places and I'm going to prepare some big mansion up there for you and I'll come back and get you. That's not what he's talking about. All the modern scholars that have looked at this today understand exactly what he's talking about. Was there going to be exchange in temples? Would the church now become the temple of God on earth? Yes. And would all believers be priests in the church, in that temple, a priesthood of all believers? What he's saying is, I'm going to the cross to prepare a place for you, a place of ministry for you. Look at what he says. First Peter 2:4, this is what Peter said. Come to him like what? Living stones, and let yourself be what? Built into a... spiritual house, to be a holy priesthood and to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through our Lord Jesus Christ. Where were they to do this? In the new temple, which was the church. Yes. See, temple, priest, and sacrifice had been replaced. They no longer met in elaborate buildings. They met in people's homes. Why? Because they realized they were the church, not a building. Are you hearing what I'm saying? They were the temple, and they were the priesthood. Are you with me? And they were offering sacrifices. What kind of sacrifices? Look at Romans 12, 1. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your what? As a what? Living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual what? Worship. If you'd like more information on this transformation from the old temple to the church and how it all worked, I want to recommend a presentation to you on our website in the New Jesus Dialogue entitled, It's Not About Going to Church. And before you freak out, are you saying we shouldn't go to church? The second sentence is, it's about being the church. Are you with me? So you can check that out online and get more information on that. But what I want you to notice is the reason John brings up this temple. Leave out what's going on the outside. Measure, analyze, focus on what's going on the inside. This is going to become beautiful in just a second. He's using this imagery as a type of the early first century followers of Jesus. This is the church. And he's saying, I know it's going to make you sick in your stomach, but don't focus on what's taking place on the outside to them in this vision. Focus on what's going on the inside of them in this vision. Watch, it says Daniel 8:11. Even against the prince of the host, it acted how? And it took the regular burnt offering away from him and overthrew the place of his. Look at Daniel 11:31. Forces sent by him shall occupy and profane the temple for fortress. They shall abolish the what? The burnt offering and set up the abomination that makes desolate. Look at Daniel 12:11. From that time, the regular burnt offering is what? Taken away, and the abomination is of desolates is. Don't try to figure out what Daniel's saying here. Leave that for a different seminar. Just see that John is taking this language and he's lifting it from Daniel and using it in Revelation 11 to indicate what I think is this. This is what the early church would have seen. John measured the temple of God, which John would have seen as being the church. First century, the church viewed the new temple of God where he dwelled as a building made with living stones. And who were the living stones? The believers, arranged together. Measure the temple of God. But here, when you look at it, don't measure the outward court, measure the inside where the altar is and where the worshipers are. What he means by that, when you look at the church, don't measure what's going on the outside. It's going to be trampled for how long? 42 months. Focus on what's going on the, not the outside appearance. By all outside appearances, what you're about to see is going to happen to the church looks like the beast has won. Are you with me? Because it's given power to conquer and to what? And to kill. Does that from all appearances look like the beast has won? Yes. Think about on Friday night. From all appearances, does it look like the lamb had lost on Friday? Yes. Don't focus on what's going on the outside of this temple. Focus on what's going on the... And what is it that's going on inside the hearts of Jesus' followers in the first? Yes, they were being brutally murdered for following Jesus. Truth. But what was going on in their hearts? What was taking place inside of them? Was it not love for the very ones who were ending their life? Wasn't it? When Stephen was being stoned, do you remember what he prayed, his final prayer? Father, don't hold this against them. Lay not this sin to their charge. What is that? But forgiveness in Stephen's heart for those that are murdering him for following Jesus. In other words, what John's doing is in symbolic fashion, taking this language of the book of Revelation, and he's taking it, he's spinning it, and he's trying to give us this same, it would be this equivalent of saying this. Don't look at the fact that Stephen's dying if you want to be a follower of Jesus. Look at what's going on in Stephen's heart
if you're questioning whether or not to be a follower of Jesus. Do you see what's happening here? Do you understand what I'm saying? Don't look at the fact that they're being killed for following Jesus. Look at what's going on in their hearts while they're being killed for following Jesus. Because what is it that wins the enemy? Seeing them be killed or seeing what's going on in their heart for their enemies while their enemies are killing them? How many are beginning to see something in Revelation 11 that's at least encouraging? This is what with the early church would have interpreted these images to mean. Once again, regardless of what school of prophetic interpretation you belong to tonight, that's okay. All I'm asking us to do is to go back and find out, how did the original audience look at this imagery? How did they interpret it? And how did it motivate them to live what kind of life they lived? Did they continue to keep dying for Jesus? Did they continue to keep loving their enemies? We don't see that change till much later. Fourth century is when it finally changed for good. But in the first century when this was given, this book was given to us to encourage us, keep following the Lamb. Do not harbor ill feelings towards your enemy. Make sure what's going on inside your heart towards your enemy is correct. Whether they kill you or not, make sure what's going on the inside of the church, the inside of the temple, the inside of the believer. Make sure what's going on your heart looks like Jesus, not just what's going on the outside looking like Jesus. Because without the heart, you can die for following Jesus. But that won't convert anybody, amen? It was love for their murderers that converted the murderers into following Jesus. Do you remember the story I told you of Andrew on the very first night? When he kneels down to be beheaded for following Jesus. And who knelt down beside him? The Roman soldier. What kind of a love for him must that Roman soldier have felt from John? For him to say, whatever you've got, even if it costs me this life, that's what I want. What was that Roman soldier looking at? What was going on the outside of John? What was going on the inside? He wasn't looking at how John was being trampled for 3.5 years. Are you with me? Andrew. They tried to kill John. Thank you. They tried to kill John. John was kind of indestructible for a little while. They finally had to seclude him on Isle of Patmos. No, Andrew, yes. They looked. The soldier didn't look at what was going on the outside of Andrew. The soldier looked at what was going on the inside of Andrew. And what made the blood of the martyr seed for the early church was that these people didn't just live well. They didn't just live other-centered lives. These people died well. They weren't afraid. And they died other-centered deaths. And that produced such a radical revolution in the early Roman world that it began to grow at such an exponential rate that today secular historians cannot explain that kind of growth. They look at it and they are baffled by it. And did Rome try to squelch it? But what happens when you just try to squelch something that's going to reveal how much they love the squelchers even more? What's going to happen? That's like pouring gas on a fire. Are you with me? How many would love for the early church, for the church today, to begin growing exponentially once again? How many would love that? Oh, it tastes sweet in your mouth, doesn't it? That hope, that idea. But remember, it's bitter in your... Realize what it's going to take. It's going to take us being willing to do what? Follow the Lamb. Thank you guys so much for being here so far. We're going to break for 10 minutes. We're going to come back. We're going to try to finish Revelation chapter 11. I think we're actually going to be able to do it tonight, honestly. Remember, for the last two nights, I think it has been, I've gotten you out a little early. I'm going to try to do it tonight. If I don't, be graceful and know that it's an exception to the rule. You know, last two nights we've been good. So you can't be good forever. You know, you got to be, anyway. Thank you for coming. We'll see you in 10 minutes. God bless you. Enjoy your intermission.